Hey mamas, it feels like fall is finally here. The temperatures have cooled off here in Cincinnati. I know that could change at any moment. That's one of the joys of living here in Cincinnati. But that's why I love my Lugs. They make such a wide variety of different shoes. So I've already pulled out my boots for fall. But should the weather be weird, like it so often is here, I also have my backups, my canvas sneaks. Lugs has a pair for every season, every style. Lugs offers a full range of stylish footwear for the entire family. So I love my Lugs, but I can also get Lugs for my husband, my toddlers, my elementary school kid. And the brand has never wavered with the passing of trends. They have found their footing as a leader within the fashion footwear since the 90s. The brand is stylish, realistically priced, and great for everyday wear. I wear them to the soccer fields, to preschool pickups, to the grocery store, you name it, I'm wearing my Lugs. Lugs has prided itself on quality materials and supreme comfort, and one thing has remained the same over all of these years, Lugs' distinctive style. The brand continues to bolster its product offering to match the consumer's needs while keeping a finger in the pulse of the latest trends. Be sure to go check out Lugs boots, their canvas options, their casual and athletic wear. You're sure to find a style that will meet the needs of you and every member of your family. Go check them out. The link is in the description of this podcast, and you can use code MIMOSAMOMS for 30% off all full priced items. And let's get started with today's episode. Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I'm your host, Abby Williams. Bear with me today. I have a little bit of a cold, so I'm sounding a little yucky. Today I'm welcoming on Dr. Tanya Kotler. Dr. Tanya is a psychologist who specializes in maternal and reproductive mental health, infant mental health, and parent-child attachment, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Through all her specialties, the topic of mom guilt and the feeling of not being good enough is very common. Dr. Tanya says that through her privilege of working over 15 years of clinical experience and research experience, she has come to truly understand the power and healing that lies in what Donald Winnicott had originally explained in 1965, the value of the good enough mother. We dive way into this in today's episode. She says that combined with her own research experience and knowledge of decades of research that substantiate the value of rupture and repair to the attachment relationship as opposed to perfect attunement. Moreover, Dr. Tanya has the value added benefit of working clinically as a psychologist with parents and their infants, which allows her to witness the meaning making and growth that occurs in the rupture and repair process in every unique relationship. We dive way into this in today's episode. I hope that you enjoy it because I so much enjoyed this conversation. You can find Dr. Kotler on Instagram at Dr. Kotler. You can find her on her webpage, TanyaKotlerPhD.com. That's where you'll find all of her workshops as well. And she's offering a 10% off for all of our listeners with code MIMOSAMOMS. You can also find all of her writing there, Motherhood Made Real, a Psychology Today column on all things motherhood, from mother rage to maternal anxiety and parent-child attachment. And also stay tuned for her book, Baby, that's coming on attachment and emotion regulation. I'm so excited for her book. I know it's going to be a good one. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started. Cheers. Dr. Tanya, welcome to the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I am so excited that you are here joining us because I so much admire you and I love the content that you're putting out into the universe. I love following you on Instagram. So welcome. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Abby. Thank you so much for having me. I am a clinical psychologist. I work currently out of Toronto, or in Toronto, Ontario. Yeah. I'm an adult and child psychologist, which is pretty unique, particularly in Canada, but in a lot of the world. And I specialize in early childhood. And the reason why I brought those two things together is because so many people, I believe, continue to focus, particularly in parenting, on, you know, the mother or the mothering one or the parent and or the child. And we are losing the focus of kind of centralizing the pair, the relationship, the parent and the child. And so I found that it was sort of instrumental to my work to be able to really understand the mind of the mother and the mind of the child, or the mind of the father and the mind of the child, or the parenting one at the same time. And so in my work, I do individual work, group work, workshops. I train other practitioners, therapists in working like me with both adults and children. And we really specialize on that parent-child developing bond.
So, like, talk to us because, I feel like so many of us know about these different attachment styles, right? And, maybe you follow a parenting account on Instagram, or maybe you have a background in psychology, maybe you took a intro level psych class and you learned about these different attachment styles. Talk to us a little bit about like what these different attachment styles are and why you kind of have a different approach to these things.
So I think there's two things. The first is that when we say attachment or just say the word at all, we need to clarify right out of the gates what we're talking about. So attachment has two really primary ways that word is used. Way one is Dr. Sears' attachment parenting, which is a style of parenting, not the science. It refers to a particular set of behaviors that a parent can do in order to, according to Dr. Sears, create a strong attachment bond. Many, 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 many people, if you are one of them and you're listening right now, there's nothing wrong with the fact that you may have thought this is the same thing as the next thing I'm going to describe, but it absolutely is not. It's just a parenting style. Okay. It's the same parenting style as, you know, somebody who talks about only buying wood toys for their children. It refers to a set of behaviors in a way that is believed to be kind of the best. Attachment science refers to the science, the study, the research of the attachment bond, and actually has very little to do with that attachment parenting model. Where they relate is this idea of proximity. So Dr. Sears took the idea of proximity and made it kind of his the core. So in attachment science, we know that the early infants need proximity, closeness to their parents in body and in mind, in order to feel felt, and then in order to explore, in order to grow, in order to develop. Dr. Sears took that and kind of made it a little literal. And so literal proximity, right? Baby wearing, co-sleeping, nursing. Those behaviors are not bad. They're not wrong, but they're not the only way. So the error with the attachment parenting movement even is that it can make it sound like those specific behaviors are the way. Whereas attachment science understands
It's kind
that
of
the
shaming to the like parents that aren't doing those things, I would imagine a little bit, like if you're unable to breastfeed, and then, I can just imagine why there's like the guilt there or why you kind of spiral there.
Totally. And we can get into all of that because that's crucial, actually, because the science shows, and we can get into a whole host of what the science actually shows, but it shows fundamentally the way the child and parent both come into the relationship, hardwired in many ways to form this bond. So, right away, it's not dependent solely on the parent to do certain behaviors. It's not about a certain set of behaviors. It's about how the parent holds the child in mind. It's also about how the child comes hardwired to seek certain things out of the parent, and how they, through their own mutual song and dance and stepping on each other's toes, come to develop, and I'm sure we'll get into it, an attachment relationship. So it's very, very, very different. And I guess the one thing I'll underscore at the start is it is not predicated, it's not based on a single set of behaviors at all.
And I think that it's probably like important to note that It can't be based on these certain set of behaviors because each child is so different, right? And like, so they all probably need something so different. So let's kind of talk about how to form, I guess, this attached relationship with our kid. You know, like myself, I'm a mom of four. And so forming these different relationships and meeting each child where they are. And I'm so like, I guess my parenting style is that I'm very like child-led. I let them kind of lead, and I meet them where they are. I kind of, you know, I have one who's a feeler and I have to sit in their feelings with them. Or I have another one who doesn't really want to share feelings right away. They need to let go, you know, calm down and then come back, you know, and that's just like one example. There's lots of different things with each one, right? Where you're just letting them kind of lead and you're just meeting them where they are. But how do we kind of figure out how to form these bonds, right?
Well, you just essentially answered it, but without all the listeners thinking that I'm just trying to make Abby feel good, I'll back it up. And the truth is, it's actually a lot of pressure for me to say that that's the way, right? As a mother of three myself, I have been doing this for about 20 years with my master's and PhD, and so it preceded me having children. And why I say that is because sometimes we go into this work because we learn or we realize many therapists, when they become mothers, their interest in it. I actually didn't do it that way, which had a downfall when I became a mother because I was full with all this information in my head. And it was like a, you know, excuse my French, holy fuck. I don't know that I can do it. And the because the do it is so open-ended. What is it? The idea. And right before this, Abby and I were joking about how my claim to fame, unfortunately, is not the top 10 ways you can do whatever. Top 10 ways to build an attachment. I don't speak that way, unfortunately, for some. Why? Because the relationship is very, very nuanced and delicate and unique to every dyad. When I speak about the dyad, I mean the parent-child pair. And it's very much about attunement, which means the presence with emotionally and physically all that is within you as parent and within your child. So noticing their facial expressions, their body language, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what's maybe going on in their bodies. They have to poo, they haven't slept. And what's going on with you? I haven't slept. I haven't eaten today. I have a big podcast interview later today. So where the attachment builds is this intersection in some ways of two people at all times, two real people. The child is a real person with needs and feelings and opinions. Right away, people fail to see that. And so those two things intersect. And so the bond is built out of the attunement of the parent to the child. But here's the clincher, and the attunement to the child to the parent. For some reason, that gets missed all the time. Both are involved in tuning into one another and themselves at all times. And so, how do we build it? It's going to be very unique for every child. There's sort of, I talk very often about the R's. And so I talk about the number one of attunement is recognition. So that's being able to recognize what we see in our child. So let's take a 2-year-old who is, you know, on the cusp, just to make it a very specific example, on the cusp of toilet training. Potentially, if your child's on the cusp of toilet training at four and you just listen to that and you're like, oh shit, Dr. Cutler mentioned 2-year-olds, that's not a thing. It doesn't
Mine
matter
were
what the
more
age.
towards gray. You're fine.
Exactly. That was, it's just an example. So you have a 2-year-old on the cusp of toilet training and you notice their face and they look like they're, you know, starting to strain and about to poo and you're trying to get them ready and you say to them, oh, I could see that you are feeling ready to make a poo. Do you want to go to the potty? And they say, no. And, you know, they put their hands in front of their chest. And so you say, you don't want to go to the potty. I can see you don't want to go to the potty. You don't like the idea of making a poo on the potty. You still prefer to make a poo in your diaper. And that's the recognition part. Okay, so that's A. That's what do I see in front of me? It's quite simple. Now, part of the recognition, where the recognition starts to shift, is that sometimes we need to recognize our mind as being different than their mind out loud in front of them. We might narrate. So we might say, "Mommy thinks you're ready." In a different example, you know, if they're kicking you because they don't want to poo, we might say, "Ouch, that hurts. You're kicking me. I set a boundary. You can't kick me. I understand that you don't want to go to the potty. Yeah. You can't kick," right? So we're recognizing their minds, but we're recognizing ours, often particularly if it's different than theirs, because what we're setting up is this idea that I can see my mind, I could see your mind, they could be different and we could still be connected. We're setting up that idea for them. The next R is often the R that I, you know, it gets defined differently at different times, but it is the way of allowing them to feel not only recognized, but now really, you know, felt. And so it's the recognized inner feeling felt. And so in this one, it's, you know, it's been described often as soothed also. It's when we help them feel that they, you can take care of their feelings. So I know you don't want to go to the potty. That's okay when you're ready. Might be a very, very simple sentence where we might say to them, versus, you know, going, "We got to go. You have to go. You're two already. You're a big boy. Let's go on the potty." Right. So that's one where we soothe the emotion state that they might be having in that minute. You think about it as an infant who you're changing on a very cold change table. You know how they turn all red and they like clench. I don't know. My kids did that. And they're like screaming. Those little bodies are tense in the air as you're changing your diaper. And you say, "Oh, you don't like changing your diaper. It's so cold. It's so cold." So that's the recognition that you say, "It's okay. I'm almost done. I'm almost done. I'm right here." And with your face and the sound of your voice, you are soothing. So you are both recognizing and kind of recognizing with a soothing element. And your presence, you're reminding them of your presence, is a way you allow them to feel also safe, which is really important. They know that while they're going through this hard thing, like you changing their diaper, they are not alone. And this, I talk about this one in the context of rupture and repair. So in this moment, they don't want you to be changing their diaper. They are unhappy. You're recognizing it. It's a mismatch. It's a rupture. You don't want me to be changing your diaper. I'm doing it anyway, but I am repairing it either at the moment by recognizing it again and naming it and soothing you with my face and the sound of my voice, or in certain other circumstances immediately afterwards or later. So an example where you might yell at your kid at the park, you have to leave and they're not leaving, and you never go. And so you're not doing this nice, you know, "I can see you don't want to leave the park. And when you're ready, we'll go." But instead you like pull them in the car, you shove them, and you're like, "You never leave when I tie the lead." Well, that's your sweet spot of repair. That's when you get in the car and you take your deep breath and you attune to yourself. That whole, I have to recognize what's going on with me. And I go, "Oh, I just got fed up. I have to get to a meeting. I just yelled at my kid." And I turn around and I say, "I know you were angry. You really didn't want to leave the park. I know you're sad. You really, whatever you think they're feeling, you really didn't want to leave the park. Mommy had to go because mommy has a meeting. So here's that recognition. I am different than you. Why don't we try to go to the park again tomorrow?" That's soothing. If they're really upset in the car, you might say, "Why don't we take a few deep breaths together while mommy drives?" So that's soothing. "And I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're sad." That's that repair of the rupture, right? So that's how we build it. In a nutshell, but we're focusing on them, what they're showing, what they need. And so every individual circumstance is going to vary based on the child. It can't, we can't create some kind of template. I mean, we can the way I just did, but it's a very vague and wide template.
Because every child definitely needs something different. And then how do you kind of feel like this like plays out? Because I feel like, you know, we're talking about this infant toddler stage of building, you know, this early bond. And then how does this bond kind of flourish, or how do we nurture it as our children grow?
Such a good question. And, you know, one of the things that I think gets in our way the most is ultimately as parents, most of us want to build kind, quote unquote, happy. I say quote unquote, because that one has, you know, we can have a whole podcast on what that means, but quote unquote, happy, grounded, well-adjusted children. And so part of why we want the 10 ways to build a secure attachment with our child is we want to know they're going to be okay.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's what it's really about. You know, it's just tell me what to do so I can set them up to be
Yeah.
okay. Right. It's a
Yeah.
deep feeling, like I'll do anything.
Right.
And so, well, you just got to see what they need and respond to that. It's like, well, what if I miss it? What if I get it
Right.
wrong? What if I rupture? How many ruptures are okay? Like, what's the point at which the ruptures are one too many ruptures?
Yeah.
And then I end up like myself in
I
therapy
feel
because
like
of my
this
mother.
sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, because I kind of feel like, I really enjoy this conversation and I want to know some of the answers to these things for exactly that last thing that you said. Like, I don't want the relationship that I have with my mother between me and my children, And yeah, like what's the steps to prevent this?
So I'm going to answer it on the very, very superficial level, and then I'll take
Right.
it like a minor degree deeper. The superficial level is, so we all want that. And the
Yeah.
part that is superficial, but not, I mean, is to set ourselves in comfort that science-wise, the research, repairs are actually fundamental. They're not only are they okay, but they're needed. And every time
Know.
I say that, people like, question me around it and try to
There's
like get
so
me in a
much
hole.
power. There's so much power in like those moments of just apologizing and being human with your kids and just like showing them that like I'm a human, I mess up, I'm really sorry I lost it earlier. Just like think about you and like your adult relationships. Like you really appreciate when somebody like owns their stuff and comes and says, "Hey, I was running late this morning and I was really short with you in the kitchen. I'm really sorry." You know what I mean? That just like self-awareness or that acknowledgement, that means so much. And I think that we do. We kind of overlook that with our little people, but I think that they
Absolutely.
need that too.
They do. And what they experience when we do that is they experience that really, really magical shift
Yeah.
from a negative to a positive emotion. So
Yeah.
they realize without us needing to say it in a very conscious way
Yeah.
that emotions are impermanent. I was just feeling really bad and now
Right.
I'm feeling better. And so my moods move. Not only do they move through the power of a relationship, not by being fixed, by being seen. So through a repair, they learn something so fundamental. It can't always be fixed. I hurt you. I can't fix what I maybe just did, but I can repair it, which is
Yeah.
so different, and it's felt to be different. And it feels really empowering as our children grow up that they might have this potential to learn that bad things and hard things happen. We're not trying to avoid bad and hard things.
Yeah.
The worst part of bad or hard things, where we learn resiliency, is when we get the ability to move through a hard thing with someone. I'm not alone. That feeling that this is hard and you've
Yes.
got me. This is
Yeah.
hard and I've got you. So all that what doesn't hurt you makes you stronger bullshit is bullshit. No, it can hurt you if
Yeah.
you're alone.
Yeah.
Adversity hurts if you're
Yeah.
alone. What allows us to feel okay is the lack of aloneness, is the I've got you. And then in some ways, we move through anything. That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It hurts. This pandemic's a perfect example. We are
Right.
suffering. Our children are suffering.
Yeah.
But a parent saying, this is hard. I'm sorry your school's been closed for so long. I know you miss your friends, is massively different than a kid sitting alone in their room, throwing a
Right.
ball against the wall or crying. They feel
Right.
less alone in this. They feel known in it, and it's going to help them survive and move through it for sure. So how do we know that we're going to do it? Well, because we realize from the research of the good enough that rupture is instrumental. It helps them realize that they can move from negative to positive emotions. It helps them realize that they can tolerate frustrations and hurts. So that's that resiliency. That's that I can move through adversity as long as you've got me and I'm not alone. It helps them realize that they're not alone, that they can trust you because you come back, because you name it, because you realize it, because you recognize it. So it's not just all this shit is happening to me, and nobody is realizing that I'm hurt or that I had a hard time. It's I'm being seen, so I can trust you to notice when you make a mistake. It helps them learn emotion regulation. What do I do during hard times? I have a kid who, from the very beginning, we call him Gandhi. in a very respectful way. He's a pacifist. He's a
Yeah.
breather. He's a
Yeah.
countertenor. He'll solve nothing in with tension.
I have
And
one of
so
those too.
he learned his way to regulate
I'm like,
emotions.
why haven't all my children just come out of the womb like with their breathing
Meditator.
exercises like you? Yeah. Then I've got the other ones that have the big emotions. So I'm like, can you take
Right.
some
And
rest,
so
please?
that kid learned I need to go punch a pillow
Yeah.
to emotionally regulate,
Yeah.
right? So through the ruptures, they learn what they need without
Yeah.
the rupture. So some of the research shows children whose parents anticipated their every move and need. And
Yeah.
those children in what's called still face experiments, and people can look it up after to see, what are these, and they're quite amazing. But the children whose parents would suddenly have a rupture where they were always one step ahead to kind of avoid these ruptures, they'd really fall apart because they
Right.
hadn't built the trust. So in these research experiments, what happens is a parent is told to go flat face, show no recognition for a moment to the child. So the child is coming at you, smiling, laughing, then crying, and you're just kind of, nobody can see me, but stone cold, right? No,
Right.
no response whatsoever on your face. And it's really quite unsettling. If I did that to you during this podcast interview, the whole thing would go awry at some point
Right.
because me and you are looking at each other. But if I was showing no emotion on my face, you'd be like, "What's up? Like, does she hate me? Are my questions
Probably hates me.
ridiculous? Right? Are my questions not making sense?"
Yeah.
So we really rely on the faces of other people. And so if we
Yeah.
do that to our children, it can be very, very unsettling. But a child who's had ruptures will work to get their parent back engaged. They'll, some of them, depending on personality, will wave their hands, they'll
Yeah.
cry, they'll scream, but they're like, "I got within me what I need to get you back online." And you
Right.
see it. You see them in these experiments do it. It's quite fascinating because they have this bag of tricks and they trust that they can get you back. That's
Yeah.
that secure attachment. The kid actually without ruptures is almost lacking that trust. There hasn't
Yeah.
been enough of an opportunity for them to know that they can have an impact to get you back.
Right.
That's kind of scary. So if
Right.
I didn't sell it enough, ruptures matter and they're
Yeah.
important. Of course, combined with repairing,
Right,
right? It's
right,
R and
right.
R. It's R and R.
Yeah.
To the second part of the question, what about those of us who sit there going, "How do I not repeat what's happened to me?" Some say, "How do I redo what's happened to me?" And then many say, "How do I not repeat?" I actually think that's the most important part of parenting. And that's why when I say attunement, it's reflection on our child, but also on ourself. It's
Yeah.
noticing the moments we get angry. It's noticing the things that are hard for us to tolerate. The child who's loud, or when our kid is anxious or doesn't want to go on a swing, or what are the things that trigger us? How do we tend to react, and why is that happening? And
Yes.
doing that without judgment, without guilt. I shouldn't get mad at him that he doesn't want to go on the roller coaster. Why am I getting mad that he doesn't want to go on the roller coaster? Doing it with curiosity. What is
Yeah.
this about? Why do I get angry when my child cries? Why do I shut down when it's really loud in the house? Where does this come from? What happened to me? And in many, many ways, learning to reflect on your own, often this is done in therapy, your own childhood, on the aspects that were maybe not repaired. So, what were the ruptures that weren't named? How were the ways that you needed things and they were not seen?
Right.
And working through that, often with the face and the love and the holding of someone else, because
Right.
just like our child, we need to feel seen in our unseen.
I think I say it in like 90% of my episodes. So like everybody should be in therapy. Like I cannot talk more highly about just like getting therapy and helping yourself like through these things, because it does, it matters, and it matters in your mothering,
Totally.
especially in your relationship with your little person, and even, it could be just like simple as you're not eating, you're not drinking, you're not taking care of yourself enough, and that's why you're being triggered. Maybe it's not, these hard things that some of us have gone through, but yeah, just being very aware of your triggers? Am I just triggered at 5 p.m. every day because it's like the madhouse and it's loud and I'm trying to get dinner on the table? And, you know, how can I better manage that 5 p.m. shuffle? You know, we call it the red zone at my house. I'm like, it gets a little
wild.
We
say the wheels
here.
Of the bus are falling off. That's ours.
We're like,
the wheels
oh my
of the bus
gosh.
Are falling like, off.
We got to get to bedtime. There's four of them. We got to get them fed, bathed. It's like, yeah, crazy, you know? But like, how are you going to get through those hard times of the day without, you know, everything going awry? And if it does go awry, how are you going to repair it? I think that that is so important because I think, you know, maybe you had a childhood like mine where there wasn't those repairs, and those they stick with you, you know, they are hurtful. Yeah. And there's stuff that you have to like deal with.
and knowing that, you know, for anyone who's listening, so this is that other R that I didn't get overly into, and sometimes I don't, and now here we are. That's that reflection R.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's probably one of the most primary aspects of the parent-child attachment, because, you know, Selma Freiberg, this prominent psychoanalyst, wrote an amazing paper called The Ghosts in the Nursery.
Yeah.
But because the things that we do not, and there's also Alicia Lieberman wrote a second paper that referred to the angels in the nursery. So it's not all ghosts.
Yeah.
But the things that we do not reflect on, make known, talk about, so make processed, organize it, what's called symbolize it, make it, let it come out of our mouth so that we can actually make sense of it. The stuff that just stays within us in our body, unprocessed, will get triggered up. The good and the bad.
Right.
And so, yes, therapy becomes this very, very important place where that gets done. And there's this idea called the parent map that I work with a lot of my patients on, where when, let's say, it's a trigger moment, we sit and we say, okay, look at four parts. What was the current circumstance? You know, was I hungry? Did I sleep? You know, was I running to a meeting, right? So current circumstance always matters. What's going on with me? So is it typical that at 3 o'clock I realize I haven't eaten today? Okay, so then we're working on a more very present-centered issue. What's that about? Why don't we feed ourselves? What was coming, getting pulled out?
Yeah.
Then we look at past circumstance. What might have got triggered? What was happening? What was I feeling while, you know, in the red zone was on, or in my house, the wheels on the bus were coming off. What was I feeling? What was that triggering up in me? What was my household like? You know, on as a Jew, the Sabbath, I talk about my household was very tense prior to the Sabbath. So if I'm tense on a Friday afternoon, I've had to do a lot of reflection on what was my household like? And is that getting triggered on me just by nature of the day of the week and the time of day? So it's what is from my past coming in. And then there's that piece of, okay, how did I respond and how would I like to next time differently? What can I do? And that together with the therapist, you will build a repertoire. You know, do I need to step outside? Do I need to put ice cubes in my hand? Do I need to listen to earphones to numb out the sound? And if anyone's listening to this and going, what the hell is she talking about? Earphones with children. Yes, you can. Believe it or not, you can hear them right outside your earphone. And it might just, you know, neutralize the sound a little bit. So learning some tools of what do I need in order to settle this down is also really, 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 really important.
Yeah. And I agree with you on like the earphone stuff, because I think that like the sensory overload that is motherhood is very triggering to, you know, maybe past stuff that you have that you're holding inside, or, you know, just it's a lot.
Our children are constantly reading us and we're reading them, right? So if we have Coldplay playing in our ears instead of Rafi, it might be calmer.
It might be a little bit better. I agree. Dr. Tanya, before we wrap up, let's like kind of touch on this good enough mother. And what does that mean? And I guess just kind of to leave us with a little bit of peace, because I think that, you know, we live in a world of social media, we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people. You have information overload now that you have the internet at your fingertips and everything's on your phone. What is this good enough mother and how can we be her?
So Donald Winnicott coined the term good enough mother to refer to a mother who was present but gave space. So it loops back exactly to what you were saying when I said, you got it, Abby. And I told everybody that I wasn't just saying that. Now you hear it. Present but gave space. So contingently responsive is the way I describe it. Not anticipating. So we've talked a lot about it throughout this interview without naming it. Not anticipating the child's needs. So you often see a good enough mother being better at good enough by second and third child because she's distracted than a first child. And that's, by the way, anyone listening going, oh God, how do I do with my first? Please, again, catch those shame moments. What it is about kind of watching and waiting, trying not to overly anticipate. When in doubt, my suggestion is narrate. When you don't know, narrate. Pretend you're a sports newscaster. Oh, I see you're putting one block on top of the other block. If you don't know what's happening right now, what they're feeling, what they need, narrate. You'll never go wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, you're tensing your fists. Are you angry? You're angry. Don't know why you're angry. What happened? You feeling something inside your belly? Is mommy not understanding what you want? Oh, you're pointing. You want your water bottle. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. So narrate, just narrate until like clumsily move along until you figure out he's going, he got the goal, he got the football, he's in the post. Just narrate.
Yeah.
And because it allows them to feel seen in the step by step and it allows them to lead. So the good enough mother is a mother who does that. And the why is all the why we talked about. So that the child learns emotion regulation and the child learns frustration tolerance and et cetera, et cetera. With all due respect to probably the person I respect the most in my field, Donald Winnicott, there was still a problem. He was a male and it was in 1960. It's still actually, if anybody hears it, very child focused. It's for the good of the child, actually the good enough mother.
Yeah.
And so I've been moving to try to shift it and look at it as a good enough pair so that the focus isn't only on the child and the mother is doing this for the child. She's actually doing this for herself too. This gives her the space to, in this moment, I don't need to be perfect and anticipate that you're hungry and therefore have the egg in front of you right away. If I'm eating my sandwich, I could finish it for my sake, not just because it's good for you and you're going to learn frustration tolerance, because it's good for me because I'm hungry.
Right. So we got to put on our own like mask first, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
And so with all the pressure and the social media, as you described, and the expectations of how we're supposed to be doing things, and this idea that we've made motherhood become this very sufferable experience.
Yes.
Like the only way we can enjoy motherhood is if we take a break from motherhood.
Right.
And so that good enough pair says, no. Enjoy motherhood from within motherhood, from within the relationship. You're hungry, eat. You have to pee, pee. You want to read a magazine while your kid's playing on the floor? Read a magazine. That idea that the good enough is about you taking care of you and you taking care of them, attuning to your needs while you attune to theirs. So you don't need to only escape the relationship in order to find yourself. Find it within, just like they're finding it within. That makes sense.
That makes sense. And, you know, I hope that everybody listening, you know, I just want you to know that you are good enough. You are a good enough mother. And, you know, I hope that you enjoyed this episode and I hope that you go give Dr. Tanya a follow. Dr. Tanya, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Cutler. That's probably the best place. My website is my name, TanyaCutlerPhD.com, where all the workshops that I run on secure attachment or mindful parenting are available to people in the US as well. I think that's where you could find me. And stay tuned because there's something really big and awesome coming in the fall for anyone who's
I'm
in
so
Canada.
Excited. Yeah, I'm so excited. Pass that along when it happens and I'll share it over on my platform as well. Dr. Tanya, thank you so much for joining us and cheers to the good enough mother.
Cheers. Have a good one, Abby.
Thanks.